Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Author Larry V. Dykstra takes readers on an introspective journey in his latest book, My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships. Through 32 thoughtfully crafted essays, Larry reflects on the vital connections that define human existence, the relationships we have with ourselves, with others, with the world around us, and with the divine. His stories, drawn from his professional and personal experiences, illuminate universal truths about personal growth, showing up for others, rediscovering wonder, and leaving a lasting legacy. Larry worked for 25 years as a corporate executive for well-known consumer brands, Gatorade, Kraft Cheese, and Pizza Hut, specializing in consumer insights, brand strategy, and innovation. Following his retirement, he pursued experiences intended to stretch him as a person. These activities explored three broad themes: playing music with and for others, serving hospitalized children, and exploring matters of spirituality and healing. Along the way, Larry found that stringing words together on paper was a useful tool for helping him process his thoughts and find meaning. Larry V. Dykstra, author of My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships, our guest on This Week in America. Larry, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Rick. Thanks for the invitation.
It is my pleasure, and I love the backstory on this book, how the whole book came about. Give us, from your words, the inspiration for writing this book, My Redemption from Pluto. Where did this come from?
Yeah, well, there's a couple pretty good clues and a couple words in the
yes.
title there, but let me start with the Pluto part. As you were so nicely said, I did have a great career way beyond what I expected, but the last year or so, I had been had some responsibilities taken away and given an assignment that I didn't embrace at the time that was more about training, teaching newer marketing and R&D folks, our processes, et cetera. And so I kind of felt devalued at the time. And it was happening around the same time that Pluto was being designated as a dwarf planet, no longer a planet. And I think Pluto was the word of the year that time,
yep.
Being devalued. So I kind of identified with Pluto. A couple years later, I had the realization that I had missed out on an opportunity to share wisdom I had developed over the years. I thought some of the new people would just come to me when I should have been reaching out to them. And so in a way, sharing these lessons I learned, and as you pointed out, some are business related, but most of them are really about life in general. I thought that maybe sharing these stories in the form of a book would provide my redemption, or make up for lost time, or make amends for the missed opportunity that was in front of me. So that's where it comes from. And then I let the subtitle do all the heavy lifting. It's about lessons I've learned. But that's kind of where those two words, redemption from Pluto, come from.
Well, it's interesting. Pluto and St. Christopher, we lost both of those around the same time period.
Oh,
interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Pluto came around, I think, 2006 was the word of the year, as Larry had mentioned. And redemption is such an important part of this story and your life and the things that you are doing now. We'll get into that. Retirement is not like, okay, where are my golf clubs? It's time to play another 18 today. You're actually out helping people and growing as a person. The book, My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships, you'll find it wherever books are sold. Larry's website is authorlarrydykstra.com. We'll have that up on our website. You can get information there. In the beginning of the book, you talk about something very important, and this really for all of us as we age in the workplace, age-related performance. You quote Arthur Brooks. Talk about that for just a second. He talks about fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence, and I love that part of the book. I didn't even get to chapter one, and I'm learning things already in the book. Talk about Brooks and that distinction he makes, and when we start maybe losing a little bit in the workplace.
Well, and I think, if I recall correctly, his point is that our learning abilities are really kind of declined, and really earlier than we probably realized.
Yes.
And it was probably around the time that I was feeling Plutoed or devalued. But what he's pointing out is that even though our ability to kind of learn facts and new ways of thinking about things, we have wisdom that we can tap into and share. And so It was very late in the process when I was really done with the book that I kind of came across his reading, and I thought that's really perfect. It kind of sums up, because I was my approach is really I try and think of what I want to say, and I'm a researcher by nature and by training, and so I always look for kind of is there something else out there that kind of confirms or alters or revises how I'm thinking about things? And that's how I discovered Brooks. Great writer, great thinker.
What's great insight? And he mentions it comes earlier than we realize, maybe between 35 and 50. So when you're 50 and you see 20-year-olds entering the workforce and you're working with them, it's valuable. It's fluid intelligence, crystallized intelligence. You'll read briefly about that in the introduction to Larry's book, My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships. The book consists of 32 short stories or essays. Why did you use this format? And by the way, it makes it very easy to read. You can pick a couple you want to read. You can go back on some of the chapters later to get a refresher. Why did you decide on this format?
Well, I should share that even though these are stories about my life, it's not our experiences in my life. It's not really a memoir per se that right. covers like my journey and the forks in the road and the challenges I faced and the decisions I had to make. These are just 32 stories that revealed something important to me. And as I looked at it, since they're chronologically didn't make sense, and they don't all happen in the same kind of world. Some happen in business, some on vacation, some happened in college, some during sports. I could go on and on, some in the hospital while volunteering. So I was looking for some way to organize this, and I reflected on, I served as a chaplain in a local children's hospital about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago. And we'll probably get into that later, but it was because I thought I could do more than provide the music. And one piece of reading we saw was a book called The Spirit of the Child by David Nye and Rebecca Hay. Or I think I may have that backwards, David Hay and Rebecca Nye.
Okay.
And they shared this concept based on in-depth interviews with children who may not have had religious training, but they had an innate ability to have relationships with themselves, with others, with the world around them, with God. And they were able to articulate that. And as I thought about that, that would be a way to take these 32 chapters that are all over the place and organize them around those types of relationships. And that worked. And the other benefit I received from that, which was unexpected, is that let's say I'm working on this chapter and I think it's about the world, it forced me to think much more deeply and express much more clearly why I thought it was connected to the world, or if it was about my relationship with the world. And so it became, a useful structure to provide deeper meaning and to kind of make sense. In a lot of ways, you're right. You could just pick a chapter at random, and I feel like you would get something out of it.
Yes.
But I think the framework, the relational consciousness framework, helps kind of organize that, and people can do it in chunks or sections if they want to, but it's up to the reader, I guess.
Well, it's a logical progression. You take us through all of these relationships and feelings. I mentioned before the story's organized in four different types of relationships we all have in life, with ourselves, with others, with the world around us, with the divine. Tell the audience about this framework and how you came up with this concept, because it really makes sense and it's so relatable for all of us.
Well, I think I just kind of talked about that it was, I was looking for a framework, and it was a really piece of reading or study during my chaplaincy time that I thought helped me think about, because the application there is people are going through a lot of existential challenges, having a children in the hospital or being in the hospital,
yes.
As you know, does that. Being able to think about, a person is made up of all four of those relationships and they're at the center of that. And so, how can I serve or support that person? Whether they're having a problem with themselves or with others or with the world, or are arguing with God or the divine. And so it was a framework that helped you kind of think about how you talked to or addressed, you know, the people that you were there to serve as a chaplain in the hospitals.
The book is My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships by Larry Dykstra. That's D-Y-K-S-T-R-A. His website, author, LarryDykstra.com. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, which will take a link there that will take you directly to his website. What are maybe one, two of your favorite stories or lessons in this book? It's difficult to probably say, okay, you got 32, pick the best one, but maybe one or two that really resonate with you. You kept going back to that and going, wow, that really is powerful.
Well, I think the one that I'm going to pick, and it's interesting because if you ask me tomorrow, you might get a different answer. the different ones have different meaning at different times, but the one that I like the best because it's impacted how I think where I focus my attention is a story. And really my approach is to place the reader in a setting and then make them kind of experience the inciting moment like I did. Because one thing about these learnings is if I gave you a list of them, and I said like things like you need to slow down or you should practice hospitality with others. There's such universal truths that you would go, oh yeah, I know that. But it's through the storytelling is where I try to engage the reader with that lesson or set them up to kind of experience that lesson the way I did. I'm going to talk about 10 years ago, my wife and I were in the Netherlands on vacation and we both grew up in a mostly Dutch a neighborhood community and attended the Reformed Church. And so on a Sunday morning, we saw the church across the canal in Utrecht and we said, well, we should go attend church. Went in and everyone was very welcoming and they spoke to us in English. But so we took our place in a back pew and the service began and it was in Dutch and the Dutch people are wonderful. They're my ancestors, but they tend to be fairly serious and stoic. And so I was noticing there was no smiles, no laughter, no humor, no energy in the place. And so I was settling in for, this is going to be a long time, like 30 minutes of the sermon, et cetera. And somehow, at a moment, there was an announcement made, and about 10 or 12, let's say 6, 8-year-olds, popped out of their seats and headed over to the aisle to the left. And they skipped and jumped and laughed their way out of the back door to the sanctuary. And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, when or why do we lose that sense of joy and wonder that's come so natural in children? And so I explore that a little bit more. But the point is, or for me, was that I do a lot of volunteer work around children, and they are such precious people. They're our future, but they also see the world very differently than us.
Yes.
And if you don't believe me, I'd suggest you go to the airport or go to a mall and watch parents on their way to a destination, their children are like wanting to go explore things along the way. And so I think as we get older, we kind of forget that there's a world of wonder out there that to go explore and experience. And it comes so naturally with children. And so when I work with them, volunteer with them, other than protecting their safety, if you let them lead the way, they will take you to some amazing kind of new insights into things. And so that's one of my favorite because I think it guides kind of the volunteer work I do, which is a lot with children. So.
Larry Dykstra, our guest on the program, his book is My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships, book available wherever books are sold. Who is this book designed for? And then we'll talk about, because it's a book, you want us to read it, enjoy it, and then act on it. But first of all, who is the book for? Is there a particular target audience you're gearing this for?
Well, I think initially I expected it to be for that group of maybe younger professionals or people who could benefit from the wisdom of someone that's seen a lot and experienced a lot and is willing to share it. But it almost goes back to the type of intelligence. I mean, I've started to see that the book seems to get the most positive reactions to people who are later in life, whether that's late in their career or in retirement. And I think that's because they are able to kind of take a step back and look back on their lives and gain meaning from it. A lot of the comments I get is like, well, that chapter reminded me of something that happened to me and where I experienced something very similar to that. And so I think it's in the sweet spot of a little bit older active learners who are really ready to reflect on what meaning they got from during their life experiences. And so, and that kind of surprised me because it was originally intended to, in my mind, to go towards those I felt I had failed initially, the younger like professional types early in life trying to, but they're so busy trying to figure it out that I don't know if they're ready for it.
The concepts that everybody can use, and I mentioned you want us to take the information in your book, your insights, and use those, incorporate those in our lifestyle. Talk about that, because it is important for us to maybe find our own voice like you were able to find yours.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many times, you know, like just building off of my last comment, someone will say, well, I have a story like that, but it went like this, and I'll say something like, well, I think you should write about that or share that. And the response I tend to get is like, no one's interested in my stories. And maybe that's the case, but I think there's value in connecting with your own stories. And writing's one way to do that. It's not the only way. But I encourage people to go tell your story. Because I think, you know, as humans, there's kind of a inherent contradiction. I mean, you know, we're all so different, but we also have so much in common. And I think if we could engage in the latter part of that by telling our stories with each other, I think it'd be a better world. I mean, that seems a little kind of idealistic maybe, but that's my wish and hope. And hopefully by reading some what I've done and what I've said and what I feel like I've learned, that maybe people will be encouraged to do the same for themselves.
You show us how to do it. You've done it successfully in your life. And I mentioned before retirement. This was like a whole learning experience for you, and learning and growing and continuing to be vital in what you do. Talk about that. So many people take retirement as sort of a time where they withdraw. Okay, I've learned all I'm going to learn. I've helped as many people as I can. Now I'm going to sit back and watch television all day, or I'm going to play golf all day or do something like that. Talk about retirement for you, because you're probably busier now than when you were actively working.
Well, in a way I am, and I'll try and come back to that. One thing I tell others who are entering retirement or about to is just think of the concept of the pie, and it's got slices, but when you're in your work life, hopefully family's a big piece, but it's really dominated. It's predominantly kind of work. And in retirement, you get the chance, particularly if you're fortunate like me to kind of not have to work, is to, you can slice the pie in different ways, and you can label the pie slices in different ways. So I have a framework I use and it changes each year, but I revisit it each year and I just say, well, what are the six or so slices of the pie that are important to me? And one might be generosity, one might be social, one might be creative. And then I'll put like, and et cetera, but you need to own your own slices. But the idea is try specific things within that slice. They're not resolutions. It's like, I'm going to go try volunteering, or let me see, I'll be a checkout person at the grocery store, making up a weird thing. But you try it on, and if it works for you, and if others seem to appreciate you in that role, then that's learning. And if not, then you try something else. And so not everything I've done and tried has worked, but it's just to keep evolving and keep growing and keep being, I think, is how I think about it. And the other part of that is there's a tendency when you retire that said, oh, you're a marketing person. Why don't you come volunteer for our group and do marketing?
Yes.
And I might do that, but no, it's a time to kind of explore other things and learn other skills and have other kinds of experiences. So,
two words that really jump out at me as I'm reading my Redemption from Pluto: purpose and curiosity. Talk about that, because those are really driving words, aren't they? And what we've talked about, what you've talked about during the conversation.
Well, and I think purpose, you know, is about just doing something that will help others or the world. And in my first book, Musical Hugs, you know, in some way that was about that, because it was learning to redefine success in terms of what I did for a living into what I did for others. What was the second word? I'm sorry. Well,
the second word was curiosity.
Curiosity.
Yes. And you want to be a lifelong learner, don't you? If you're curious about something, you're going to learn about it.
Yeah. And I encourage that. I don't know. I've not explored that. I don't know how natural that is for everybody, but that is a big part of who I am. Like I said before, I did have training in graduate school around research techniques, and my first jobs in marketing were using, you know, research methods. And I don't know if it was part of it, but I think I'm just curious and a researcher on my own. And in today's age with the internet, you can go into so many rabbit holes, but I find it very useful to kind of, it just enriches me when I say, well, I wonder about that. And I'll go into it and try and learn a little more about it and not go too deep, but just it's kind of rounds me out and it keeps filling the picture, I think, of some of the things that might be going on with me in my life. So
that's an interesting point, because now it's so easy to do that. If you get a thought and you're wondering a little bit more about that thought, you, in 30 seconds, you can go on the internet and find something. You can choose to go even deeper, or you can be satisfied with that just, you know, sort of tip of the iceberg type of a message and go on from there. Time is going by so quickly. The book is My Redemption from Pluto. I'd like to end up the conversation today talking about the practices you wrote about, the four types of relationships we all have in life. Share a little bit about that with the audience so we have something that we can take away and really guide us to leading a more fulfilling life.
Yeah, and it builds on the four types of relationships, but the question I asked myself was, how can we stay in touch or be aware of those four types of relationships? I see life as kind of, it's a series of moments, and so I came up with this affirmation that helps me concentrate on the current moment and try and capture something there, a little snapshot, if you will. But it goes something like, there's nothing I would rather be doing, which is kind of about the self. There's no one I would rather be with right now, which is about the others, which is you right now, Rick. There was nothing I would, there's no place I'd rather be, which is on this interview, and I'm going to look for something in the divine in this, or some higher power or some deeper meaning in this. And then to wrap it all together, it's like I'm going to let this moment become a part of what I call the one and only me. And I think the value in it, it's kind of forces you to kind of, since they're stated as a positive, like there's no place I'd rather be. So It forces you not to go to the downside, but look for something good in what's going on. And I'd say this works 99% of the time. It's not real effective during a root canal. No offense to dentists, and sometimes TSA checkpoints, it doesn't work. But for the most part, regardless of what you're going through, if you say, this is no place I'd rather be, nothing I'd rather be doing, I have no one I'd rather be with, this something good is going to happen out of this. And I think that's kind of like a daily affirmation, or not just daily, like whenever I need it,
yes,
that I use. So,
Do we miss out on the moment by thinking ahead? We're here. This is a moment in time, a 30-minute moment in time that we're sharing. So often when people, they're not in the moment. They're there physically, mentally. They're tomorrow. They've got another meeting. They've got a phone call they have to make at the end of the day. They have to pick up somebody after school. Do we miss out on a lot because we're not in the moment?
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of the first rings my wife gave me was like, life is a journey, not a destination, because she's a journeyer and I was a destination person. And so I think I've come a long way with her positive example to kind of really look at the journey and the moments and celebrate those because we don't know how many more we'll have. So
grasp the moment, enjoy the moment. That's one of many lessons in Larry's book, the book available wherever books are sold. I'm going to talk about the other books as well. If you're watching the video, you're seeing a number of book covers, four in all, on the screen. The book we're talking about, of course, My Redemption from Pluto, In the Service of My Country, Musical Hugs, and Music on a Mission. Just briefly a little bit on each of those books, because they're really well written and have this theme that you bring to us in all of your books.
Well, Musical Hugs, I mentioned before, was, in short, I was, the last few years of my work experience, I provided music on an on-site daycare center to four-year-olds. It was the greatest experience I was having at the time. No, that's not true, but it was wonderful. And so I wanted to find a way to retain that. And so I discovered an organization, and that's what the Music on a Mission is about, that organization called KidLinks. And the founder, 42 or 43 years ago, I think it was, decided his calling was to provide music to sick children and their caregivers in hospitals and other kinds of settings. And so I after my retirement, I followed these two gentlemen around. Because there's more involved than just doing a song. You have to learn some things about the hospital. And so Musical Hugs is about things I saw firsthand, the impact of music and showing up. And then the middle part is about my experiences as a chaplain and then getting back into the music. So that's Musical Hugs. Music on a Mission is a third-person account of the history of that organization, KidLinks, and that's at kidlinks.org. And I just wanted to honor my mentor, Jim Newton, as well as capture the history, because I think that's part of what I found on Pete's Hut and Gatorade. I think I wrote in the introduction is knowing the origins of your organization, knowing the values from which it was based on is important. So that was that. And then finally, In the Service of My Country is my father's memoir. He served in World War II as a flight engineer on B-24 bombers out of southern Italy and completed his 50 missions. And like most of that generation, didn't really talk much about it when he got home. But as he neared his retirement, he started sharing more stories. And I thought it was a story, a firsthand account of what he went through and what he saw and what he believed. And it was actually one of the best experiences of my life, because we were 1,000 miles away, but I'd call him up and say, you said this here and this here, help me reconcile that. And he'd explain it. And then he would say, have I told you this story? But anyhow, he finally told me a story that I felt I could end on, but it was, I was able to get this into his hands at about age 93, and he became kind of a local celebrity of sorts. He spoke at the elementary school there, and so I just feel like I was able to honor him and his service, and all of those from that greatest generation, as Brokaw called them, for what they did. And so there aren't many of those veterans around anymore. And so anyone that's interested in kind of getting a firsthand account of what the world was like and what serving the country in that way was like might find it an interesting read.
You bring it to life with the story of your father, the good and the bad, the tears, the laughter, everything they went through in that book. And the book, yes. Again, is available at Larry's website. The name of the book is In the Service of My Country. All of the books available at Larry's website. When you take your guitar and you perform for children or caregivers, who gets the most out of that, them or you? I get the impression you really learn as a person, and it brings you to their reality, and you can share with them. How important is that to you to have that guitar and to see the reaction from these people?
Well, I think it is. And you don't always, by the way, get much of a reaction. And there's an important distinction there. I'm going to give you something I learned from my mentor, Jim Newton, when I started doing this. A common situation is, and I have a list from the child life specialist, and we could have a whole discussion. That's a function in children's hospitals that takes care of the emotional, social, and developmental needs of the children. But a common scenario is I'll make sure they're not sleeping or busy, and I'll knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm Larry, the folks at Child Life said, you might like a song." And I'm looking at the child, and there may be a grandparent or parent there who is kind of bored and says, "Oh, look, a guitar." And the child is going, mm-hmm. I might start a little conversation, but if I conclude, and this was what my friend Jim taught me, it's like, if I conclude that child doesn't want a song, it's not about me. And so I'll say something like, if he or she doesn't want a song, they don't get to say no to anything here. So if they want to say no to my song, that's probably a better gift than the song would have been. And it takes everybody off the hook, and I move on, because again, it's about serving people where they are and giving them what they need. And if they don't need a song, that's all right. But it is the sense of self-worth, I guess, if I want to put it that way, I get from just knowing that I showed up for somebody. I think there's a real power in like a stranger coming in with a guitar and saying, "Hey, I'm here to offer this if you want it." And I think that's what I get out of that.
That's another interesting message, which is to be in the moment and read the room and understand. You think a song is going to perk this person up. You go in, you realize a song's not going to do it. If I just chat for a few minutes and leave and he has silence, that's going to do it. So you're able to shift gears there, and you're not going to play the song you'd planned. I'm just going to chat and leave.
Yeah, it's interesting, because one of the basic principles and values of KidLinks is all of our songs have intentional messages of encouragement or self-esteem and metaphors that help that. And as much as I believe that's true and powerful, a lot of times I think it's just the act of showing up and being there.
Yes.
That a stranger is the power of what happens in the volunteer work. And I'm careful when I say that, because I think, having songs that are not just, Wheels on the Bus or ABCs, it's important in those settings and probably anywhere. But just being there and showing up is a big part of the mission.
Tell me about the new book. It's, I understand, Learning to Lose, Reflections on My Senior Softball. Is that out yet, or you're getting ready to release it?
No, I'm in the process. And it's interesting study in terms of learning what the story is about. I'm in my fourth year of playing senior softball. And I'll just jump to the, and I got assigned to a team. I went online and saw there was a league. And so I was assigned to a team, and I was a pretty serious athlete and fairly competitive in my younger days. And the team has a long track record of being the worst one in the league. And so, and some of the things I saw, the ways they were able to lose. So originally, I conceived this as a story about Larry coming to grips with his competitive nature, because played over 100 games so far. I don't know the precise number. And of the games I've played in, we've only won, like, here's the drum roll, 3. And so But what I've learned is there's a philosophy that our team has about making sure everybody can play. And there's also, by interviewing some of the retired players, it kind of gets back to something we touched on before. It's sort of, you know, we're able to kind of, when we play the game in our late 60s, 70s, or even some 80-year-olds, 80-somethings, we're able to relive and something that we experienced as a child, and are able to enjoy that. And we don't know how many more games we have. And so make the best out of this current game. So I think the narrative, the lesson is moving away from my personal challenge, because I think I've overcome my personal challenge of wanting to win. Seeing it's really about being together, participating, and experiencing something that we haven't experienced since our youth. And so
as your other book, something very insightful, and I'm looking forward to having a chance to read and to hopefully talk about Learning to Lose, Reflections on My Senior Softball. That book will be available. If you check Larry's website, you'll get information on that book and all of the books we discussed on the program today. It's Larry Dykstra, D-Y-K-S-T-R-A. The book is available wherever books are sold. Go to his website, author LarryDykstra.com. It's very simple. We'll have that up on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I'd like to thank Auctorum House. Auctorum House, they're empowering authors, crafting excellence, your ideal partner in the journey toward literary success, for arranging our conversation today. That's auctorumhouse.com. Larry, it's been a pleasure. So much to talk about. Great having you with us on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
I wish you the best.
Thank you. You as well. And 88 consecutive losses. I hope you have put together a couple of wins here during the course of the season. The book tonight.
We had one this year.
Okay. You got the one already for 2025. Yeah. We can relax now. We've got our victory. My Redemption from Pluto, Lessons Learned from Life's Relationships, the latest from Larry Dykstra. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You're listening to This Week in America, and we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.